Here's the pitch. Willier drives one high and deep into right field, at the track, at the wall. Gone! He got the slider. He launched a three-run homer, his second of the day, and it is 5-2 Red Sox.
Willier, Abreu, take a bow, buddy. My goodness, put the team on your back. I told you, get this man a slider over the plate, and he's going to hit it a long ways, and that was a missile on a line. What a swing in a huge spot.
This is Red Sox Review, and it starts right now. Here's your host, Christian Arcand.
All right, Red Sox Review, let's go. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Christian Arcand here with you for about 40 minutes. We don't have a ton of time. We got to kick things over to the Sweet 16, which I believe is going to be the BYU-Alabama game, which just started at the Prudential Center over in New Jersey. So we only got 40 minutes. Christian Arcand here. Brian Frisoco behind the glass taking your calls again. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. If you want to chime in, you got to do it early and often, and I will take as many calls here as I can tonight because I know a lot of people are jazzed up after watching the Red Sox and Willier Abreu get this season off to a very, very nice start. And I know it's one game out of 162. There's a long way to go, of course. But this is not an ordinary Red Sox season, and I think we all know that. I think we're all aware that there's a little bit more, there's a little extra involved when it comes to this season and it comes to the expectations and the hype and excitement. I was saying before, I don't really remember another season that had this kind of hype going into it. I really don't. I mean, there's been other good off seasons, not great ones. I think the David Price and the Chris Sale off seasons with Dombrowski were pretty good. Dice K, that was a great off season. Like, you know, there's been some good ones over the years, no question about it. But it's been a while, and this was a big one. Garrett Crochet, who you saw today, and we'll get into the start that he had. I thought it was good, not great. Aroldis Chapman, who pitched very well and has pitched well all spring. Alex Bregman, who had pretty good defense over at third base, had a tough time at the plate, as all the Red Sox middle of the lineup, top of the lineup really did. Outside of Jaron Duran, Devers, Bregman, Cassis, and Story, not one hit between them. Story did get on base with a walk, ended up stealing a base. It was a big, big time in the game. So it's not as if he didn't do anything, but you definitely saw offense coming at a premium in this game. Really for everybody, except Willier Abreu. Willier Abreu was terrific. 3-for-3 in this one, 4 RBI, 2 home runs, a walk, and 3 runs scored. He was tremendous. I mean, really, he looked like he had been locked in for the entire spring. And as you heard there at the end of the game, Fleming was talking to him. He barely even got any at-bats this spring. Abreu was not, like, killing it down in Fort Myers and just carried over his hot streak into this first game. No. He had a hard time. He was coming back. He had that GI thing. He was puking and everything. Like, that's going around. You know, Mookie's got it. Porzingis had it a little while ago. Everybody's got the bubble guts these days, but for Abreu, no problem. He comes out, and he just was nails raking at the plate against Eovaldi, against anybody really who was in front of him. He had a good at-bat in every single at-bat. Even the 4 at-bats, he walked in one of them, had 3 hits, including the 2 home runs. He drove in 4 of the 5 runs the Red Sox scored in this game and accounted for 3 of their 6 hits. So, you know, it was a pretty good Willier Abreu game, I would say, and someone who I think deserves a ton of credit for coming back and being able to produce right away, especially against the tough righty there like Nathan Eovaldi. That being said, over on the Red Sox side, Garrett Crochet, I don't want to say he was a disappointment because he did go 5 innings, only allowed the 2 runs, and struck out 4 batters, so it wasn't like he was bad. But I do think it was a little less than maybe what we were hoping for, a little less than what we were expecting. You look over at Nathan Eovaldi on the line that he had, 9 strikeouts in 6 innings, 2 walks on 3 hits. I think that's a little bit more in the ballpark of what we were expecting Garrett Crochet to come out here and do. And even early on, you saw him falling into some deep 3-2 counts. You saw him missing the plate. I know that they were unhappy in the broadcast with the strike zone tonight, but I didn't really think it was all that egregious personally. I thought it was, you know, strike zone. It's the first game of the year. And it was the home plate umpire, Todd Tichenor. Hunter Wendelstedt was the first base umpire. He's not very good, and I don't know much about this Tichenor guy, but they were very, Will and Will did not like his strike zone at all. I thought it was whatever. I mean, I didn't really think one way or another about it. There were some pitches that he missed, but I didn't think it was egregious or biased or anything like that. At any rate, Crochet, struggled a little bit. He had a hard time getting guys out early on in this one, but he did settle in and was able to get things going until that Higashioka double, which was an absolute rocket. But other than that, I think that Crochet did good and very well in his first Red Sox start. I wouldn't say he blew everyone away, but he was good. He was solid. We'll see what Tanner Houck can give him tomorrow. I also thought that Garrett Whitlock pitched two strong innings. I was very happy with the bullpen today. I thought Whitlock's two innings were very good. He only had the one hit, struck out a batter. Aroldis Chapman gave up a hit, but other than that, clean inning for him. And then Justin Slayton gets him down 1-2-3 in the ninth inning, records his first save. Chapman picks up the win, and the Red Sox pick up a win as well, 5-2, the final score here against your Texas Rangers. Once again, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We got lines open here as we get ready to... I don't know. as far as this season's concerned, and as far as the future of this team and everything else, this is the type of game that you feel good about. Texas Rangers are not a pushover team. They got some good hitters in that lineup, and the Red Sox pitching staff was able to limit them. Two runs at home on opening day. It's not like opening day out here either, by the way. Opening day in Boston, where it's like freezing. You know, you're out there, it's like April 5th or whatever. I don't even know what day the home opener is this year. I should know that off the top. But, you know, it's like early April. The wind is whipping around. You're over there. You're huddled up. You're still wearing, like, your ski jacket. You know? It's tough. You got the beers, but, you know, your hands are getting cold while you're drinking them, like that type of thing. We've all been there. We know what that's like. But that's not what it's like in Texas. In Texas is beautiful. And it was a beautiful night tonight. You know, to have that offense and those is Semien, Seager, Langford, Adelis Garcia, Berger, who they traded for and had a couple of nice plays in the infield. You know, Pilar is a sneaky Red Sox killer. Young had a couple of hits tonight. Higashioka had that big hit. You remember him from the Yankees. And where was he last year? The Padres?
Padres. I think he's part of that Juan Soto trade.
That's right. Yeah. Good little hitter, that kid. You know, although he did induce a balk, which I thought was funny. Robert Garcia is on the mound, and I forget what happened. Someone was on first base. I think it was Campbell, right? Yeah,
it was Campbell. Christian
Campbell's on first base after his first getting on base for the first time in the majors. And as Garcia's turning around, Higashioka's trying to get his attention. He's like waving at him. And Garcia sees him and like jumps. jumped forward. It's like,
I think he scared him a little bit.
I think he did. I don't think he was expecting to see the catcher doing that. Either way, it was a balk. He balked him over to second base, and that was that. But, yeah, aside from that, I think that the Red Sox should feel good. Pitching staff should feel good about this one. And the offense, I'm not worried about the offense. If Duran, Devers, Bregman, Cassis, and Story aren't getting the job done, you can always count on Willie Abreu. I'll tell you who I do feel a little bad for after this game, and that's Roman Anthony. He probably watched that and was like, okay, well, looks like my debut's not going to be tomorrow. I can tell you that at least, because you got to ride out this hot hand here with Willie Abreu. And while we're on the subject of Willie Abreu, maybe a guy who knows that there's a stud breathing down his back. Pause. You know, like there's this 20-year-old phenom, number one prospect in all of baseball, who's just waiting for his opportunity to break into that outfield. You got Jaron Duran, who was an MVP candidate last year, probably not going anywhere. Sidon Rafaela, another young player. He's sort of in the same ballpark, I would say, as Abreu, but even younger than him. And then there's Abreu, you know, he's over there in right field, gold glove caliber player. And very aware, I'm sure, that Roman Anthony is the apple of the Red Sox eye and that they're waiting to get him up there and they're looking for an opportunity to do it. And he's not going to give him one today, boy, I'll tell you that. Willie Abreu not giving them any sort of opportunities to do anything, as he was the man today. He was absolutely the man. And to hear him after the game talking about that emotional day last year, his recovery from the GI infection and everything that he was dealing with all through the spring, it was cool to see. And if he can keep this up, even temporarily, you know, I know the Red Sox are going to hit. I know Bregman's going to hit. Devers is going to hit. He struck out three times today, but I know he's going to hit. And Duran and the rest of his story, I know those guys are going to hit. We know they are. That's sort of a given. They're not going to hit every night, but they are going to hit this year. Willie Abreu, I can't say I was had any idea what you're going to get from him. And still, you don't know what you're going to get from him this season, but that's a great way to start things off. That's a great way to start off. That gives a guy confidence early on in the year, batting in the bottom third of the lineup there, just ahead of Connor Wong and behind Christian Campbell. I think that this is all shaping up to be a pretty good thing here. If you can get some consistent production from Willy Abreu, I think that you're in pretty good shape. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. What else? Oh, Garrett Whitlock. The bullpen in general. You had your three best relievers out there in this game today, and it looked like it. Garrett Crochet struggled a little bit. You know, he threw a lot of pitches through those five innings, and he got deep into a lot of counts. The Rangers were giving quality at-bats to him. And then when Whitlock and Chapman and Slayton came out, I thought that they were much more efficient, and I think that they were able to sort of see what was going on through the first two times through the order and did a good job adjusting to that. Whitlock, I thought, was excellent. Chapman, I thought, was excellent. Slayton, I thought, was excellent. I don't think any of them, I don't have really any notes for any of them. And that's part of this team that I don't want to say concerned about, but it's part of the team I wasn't totally sold on yet, was this bullpen. I think the bullpen was going to be good. It was going to be great. I don't know. I wasn't even sure it was going to be good, really. I mean, listen, when they signed Aroldis Chapman, I wasn't doing backflips for that move. I thought that was an odd opening salvo for them this offseason. Going after that guy. That's your first move? Okay, well, I guess you need a power lefty, even though you kind of already had one. But either way, not going to go down the Kambuza road again. But you did already have a power lefty in the bullpen. I thought it was odd that was the first thing that they went for. They needed help in the bullpen, sure. I just thought that was a weird opening salvo. Anyway, looks like a pretty good one here, as they were able to follow that up with the Crochet deal, the Buehler deal, the Bregman deal, and so forth. And I think that, you only react to things as they happen. And a lot of us were confused seeing that. Chapman, that's your first move? Really? Okay. I hope there's more coming, and luckily there was. So that's another aspect of this thing that I like. You got Tanner Houck going tomorrow. I'm interested in seeing what he looks like tomorrow, because Tanner Houck had a bad spring. Couldn't strike anyone out. Was getting tattooed a lot of these games. And Houck was someone who was he an all-star last year? I think he was. He was your ace last year, and he never really pitched with full-on ace stuff. I don't think he held him back or anything like that, but he's probably more suited to be a number two or maybe even a number three on a stacked rotation. But that, regardless of all that, I'm interested in seeing what he looks like coming out here. I'm interested in seeing what kind of season that he has, because Tanner Houck is someone who I still consider to be a young player on the rise, right? I look at Jarren Duran that way too. I think Jarren Duran, you know, you look at these last 2 years with him, and yeah, they've been explosive. But they are part of an upward trajectory, and if he continues on that upward trajectory, then Jarren Duran could be the MVP this year. If he improves from last year, from what he did last year, and keeps on doing that, I mean, listen, you know, he's still got some great players in the American League, but he was right up there, and he was a candidate last year. Devers, tough day for him, going 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts, but I'm not worried about Rafael Devers. I'm not. Although in the back of my mind, in the very back of my mind, that part of your mind with the intrusive thoughts, you know what I'm talking about, Brian?
Absolutely.
That part of your mind that just says things and you're like, shut up, stop saying those things.
Like, maybe you should have played more spring training games.
Or maybe he really isn't good as a DH. You know?
Like a mental thing?
Like a mental thing. He was very adamant about playing third base. He said he didn't want a DH. You look at his numbers as a DH and they're not very good. He doesn't do it that much, but like, you look at the times he's DH'd and it's not like his numbers get better. That is one of those things that kind of defies logic. You know, the guy's a hitter. This is what he's known for. You're standing in the batter's box. Who cares if you were at third base for the last half inning or sitting on your ass? What's the difference? You're up there in the batter's box. But there is a difference. There is a difference. These baseball players are crazy. They're all crazy. They're all wound super tight. They're all very high strung. And if you disrupt their routine, even just a little bit, the delicate geniuses, you know, it could throw them off. I'm not kidding. I know I'm being kind of a dink right now, but like, that is true with baseball players. It's true with pitchers and it's true with hitters. It really is. Like, they are creatures of habit to a fault sometimes. And I do wonder if Devers, I mean, listen, I don't think it's going to be something that is a problem all year, but it may be something that he doesn't immediately take to. It may be something that requires an adjustment over time. And maybe some of it has to do with him just not being happy about it. Like Cora said, after spring training was over, and he was talking to the afternoon show the other day, and he was like, listen, you know, he doesn't always have to agree with it. You don't have to like it, but this is the way it is. Raffy's going to be our DH. Bregman's going to be our third baseman, and that's the way we're going to proceed. And, you know, like, I'm not here to make everyone happy. I'm not here to, you know, worry about everyone's feelings. I'm here to put the best possible team out there. And he believes that Devers at the DH and Bregman at third base is the best, for defensively anyway, best way to do it. Offensively, I think you can still question that. And we talked about that last night with the Play Tessie guys. Is this a better offensive lineup now than it would be with Bregman at second, Devers at third, and Yoshida DHing? Now, Yoshida's on IL, so it's kind of a moot point right now. But we know that when he comes back, Devers is still going to be the DH. So you kind of have a man without a country there in Masataka Yoshida. And I think that could end up being a problem if they try to trade him or end up having to DFA him or whatever it ends up being. I don't want anyone to get injured. But the only way I can see Yoshida breaking through is if someone does. And I think that that's, you know, sort of a, when you have log jams at certain positions, that can be an issue. And with Yoshida, found out yesterday he's been throwing footballs all around Fort Myers. Baseballs, not so much. And until he's able to throw, then you're not going to see him in the outfield. And if you can't see him in the outfield, then you're probably not going to see him at all. Which, again, is not really anything to worry about today. But if Devers is struggling hitting as a DH, which is weird to even say, struggling hitting as a DH. I can hit when I play third, but when all I have to do is hit, I can't do it. Like, that's weird. But whatever, it's baseball. Baseball players are weird. That's how they operate. They're like that. You know, what are you supposed to do? So with that being said, I think that you have a, with Devers anyway, I don't think you have really much to worry about. Tristan Casas had a tough day, 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. He got robbed of a base hit up the middle by, I think that was Berger that made that play. They were in the shift, and Berger made a great play and a great throw to get him at first base, robbed him of a hit there, so maybe that's a little bit misleading. I thought some guys put good wood on the ball. You had Bregman had a nice, solid shot to right field, a line drive there that hung up a little bit. Garcia got under it. Same with Jaron Duran. Jaron Duran in the third inning, I want to say, hit a sharp liner out to right field, but Garcia just happened to be perfectly placed there, and that was that. Other than that, I mean, listen, it was a tough day. Nathan Eovaldi was dealing in those first few innings. That second inning when he struck out the side with all those curveballs, I was gasping at some of those pitches. I was like, whoa, where'd that come from?
Devers looked bad all day, but he looked especially bad against Eovaldi.
Against Eovaldi.
He looked overmatched.
He couldn't hit Eovaldi with a surfboard today. I mean, that was a rough one for him. And Eovaldi, listen, Eovaldi, we know what Eovaldi is. We remember Eovaldi. Is he a number one ace, like World Series? No, he's not. But he's definitely a solid power pitcher, and he was out there dealing again today. You had the best part of that Rangers bullpen, too. Garcia, old friend Chris Martin, Luke Jackson, who's supposed to be their ninth inning guy, and he was awful in this one. Only got the one out, and that was that. I thought Martin looked pretty good. And then Sean Armstrong came in relief of Jackson. And that was after the home run already got given up, and that was that. So I think, with the totality of everything here in this game, Alex Cora's got to be feeling pretty good. On a day where it was tough to get any offense going against the tough Rangers pitching staff, Willier Abreu was able to be enough for this team. And on a day where Garrett Crochet didn't really have his best stuff, and maybe was a little, you know, overexcited with the opening day on a new team and a big market and all that, still good enough. 2 runs in 5 innings on 5 hits. I mean, listen, that's not going to win you any awards, but it was certainly good enough today. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll take a quick break, come back, and wrap things up next here on Red Sox Review.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
The 2-2. Swinging a high fly into center field. Rafaela's got it lined up. He waits. He's there. He makes the play. And the Red Sox win it on opening day thanks to Willier Abreu and his 2 home runs. 5-2 the final in Arlington.
Willier Abreu, who had a part in every run for the Boston Red Sox today. It's Christian Arcan here. This is Red Sox Review. If you want to jump in and join the conversation, you got to do it right now. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We're only going until 8 o'clock tonight, folks. We got to pass things over to the Sweet 16, BYU and Alabama, live from the Prudential Center. That game's already in progress, so we'll be handing it off to them here in about 15 minutes. But first, let's hear from the manager. Don't call him Skipper. That's Alex Cora, and here he is.
Put good at bat. 3-2 counts. We battled. We took our walks, and then Willie had the big game. But I think overall, we struck out a lot. I think that pitch mix by Nate, that was different. than what we expected. But, you know, we kept fighting. Obviously, you know, the two big swings, you know, they were huge. But I think the walk before the stolen base, putting Hammy to run there, you know, and put pressure on the pitcher, you know, probably got a good pitcher hit for Willie just being at first base.
Yeah, you talked about Willie kind of being up against the clock in spring training to make the roster that you trusted him. How much did...
Yeah, I mean, Jaron was like, oh, you don't need spring training. Like, actually, he probably got more at-bats than you. You know, because he was getting 7 and 8 every single day since he went back. And, you know, he's such a good player, dynamic. Last year he had a big one here, big game, right, when his grandma passed away. And now, you know, he had two for the Twins, you know. He can go one, you know. For the Twins, you got to get two.
One for each.
Yeah.
You decided to keep him in against that lefty, Garcia, and whatever inning that was. Just helped kind of set up that.
Yeah, I mean, me and Ramon, we were talking about it. Men in scoring position, probably, and Willie. There's going to be situations, his base is loaded, one out, they bring the lefty for him, and we got ref, you know, and we're going to do that. We got Romy, too, but it just put a good at-bat, too. I think his swing will play against lefties. It's going to benefit him, too, against righties. Sometimes when you only face righties, you become too pull happy. And if you remember 2 years ago, he was able to drive the ball to left center. He didn't do it last year. So he'll play. We'll pick and choose, you know, and, you know, good job by him.
What do you think of Crochet today?
He was good. A lot of cutters. Vila was okay, right? I think he found his fastball kind of like halfway through the outing. Of course, he wanted to keep going, right? But we're in the business of taking care of him. We have to do that. And, you know, 5 innings, 90-something pitches or 90, did a good job.
Bullpen kind of do like kind of exactly what you needed today, and you had it structured.
Yeah, and that's what we wanted to do. You know, Witt, that's how we're going to use him, multiple innings, regardless of the pocket. You know, Seager was leading up the eighth. That's for Chapman. He can get righties out, and then Slayton was outstanding.
Alex, was there ever a point in spring training you thought you might not have Willier?
There was at one point, yeah, I was very aware about the whole situation, but thank God nothing happened, you know, and he was able to get his at-bats and get his strength back. He's still down a little bit. Weight, his weight is down, but, you know, he's a good player, and I'm happy that he's here.
What do you think of the day that Campbell had?
It was good. I mean, it's the big leagues, man. It's not easy to do it. He was nervous and put a good at-bat, the walk. Then the last one, he hit it hard, got his... I guess that was a hit, right? Mm-hmm. Dan probably is laughing over there, right? yeah. But whatever, a good one. Probably this is the first time he's been pinch ran in his life, you know. But we know what Hammy can do. Obviously, the defense too. So we felt that that was a spot. But overall, a good one, and we won, so everybody's happy.
Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox there, happy talking about Willier Abreu, about pinch running for Christian Campbell, which I thought was an interesting call there in the ninth inning. They brought in David Hamilton, and it was an upgrade defensively at second base. And also, I guess he's a little bit faster than Christian Campbell, although I wouldn't have known that. At any rate, nice day for don't call him the skipper, Alex Cora. And let's get to the phone. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll lead things off with Matt in Rhode Island. Matt in Rhode Island, go ahead. You are the first Red Sox review caller of 2025. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, man. How you doing? Great game. You know, obviously just the first game. But I just got to say, if everything being on average, if you look at 1 through 9, they're going to do a lot of damage this year, scoring a lot of runs. And, you know, except for a couple teams, they're definitely a top 5 offense. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Matt. And I agree with you. I think that the Red Sox have a chance here to be, I don't know if a top 5 offense, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. I think that they have the horses for that. They have all the tools. They have all the tools to be the best team in the American League, I think. The Yankees aren't bad, and I don't think that, you know, the reports of their demise have been exaggerated a little bit. Yeah, they did lose Juan Soto, but they also brought in Paul Goldschmidt and
Cody Bellinger.
So, I mean, you know, not that those guys are what they were 7 years ago, but they're still pretty good. And, yeah, Gerrit Cole went down with the injury. They're not going to have him. Max Fried's pretty good. So they did get some insurance for him, I think. I mean, I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening there. But overall, I mean, listen, Baltimore with a big win over Toronto today. Tampa didn't play today, did they? No Tampa?
No, they got delayed because of, I think, weather, so they're playing tomorrow.
Okay, so there you go. Yeah, no Tampa Bay Rays. It had to have been an away game with weather, right?
I assume so, right?
The dome?
Right.
Or no, didn't their dome get torn up? What happened in Tampa? There was a storm, and didn't it, like, rip off the roof of Tropicana Field, or am I crazy? Did I imagine that? I may have imagined that. Anyway, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Garrett Crochet was the starting pitcher today. He didn't end up getting the win. It was a no decision for him. 5 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, and 4 strikeouts. Let's hear from Crochet.
Yeah, it was kind of a grinder day from the start. I felt like, you know, I struggled with consistent execution. Maybe took a few too many shots in the first couple innings trying to get swing and miss, and kind of dug myself in a hole with pitch count early. But, you know, later on in the game, kind of just started trusting the defense and, you know, trusting everybody other than myself, and just started trying to fill up the zone as best I could.
You talked last, I think, in your last start, being frustrated with a leadoff walk, yet another one of those, yeah. And that kind of came back to kick you a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, just walks in general. You know, last year I feel like I didn't walk guys, so I feel like I've been putting a little excess pressure on myself to not walk guys. Realistically, though, it's part of the game. Had a chance to pitch around it. Wanted the sinker to Higashioka, obviously just left it with a lot of plate. That's just kind of it. If there was one pitch I could take back, it'd be that one.
After the second half last year, sort of having to go through that, did it feel good to say, I'm just going to pitch right back?
Yeah, for sure. To be honest, I don't really think about that at all anymore. I was, you know, like I said, the first 2 innings really taxed my pitch count, and I was, you know, I'm going to walk away from today priding myself on the fact that I was able to be a lot more efficient there later in the outing.
Bradford and McAdam could really do a good buddy cop show if they wanted to. Like, McAdam's the tough cop, Bradford's the good cop, you know what I mean? Like, the good cop, bad cop routine. They could definitely do that. That would work. I would watch that if that was a thing. Garrett Crochet talking about some of the struggles he had early on in the game, some pitches he'd like to have back, things of that nature. I'm not worried about Garrett Crochet. I'm not. It's not like he had a bad game. He didn't overwhelm anybody like we all thought he would, but he definitely was strong in the dialing up the fastball. I think he topped out at 97 today. That's the fastest one I saw. I don't know what the official gun said, but that was the highest one I saw on Nesson today. So, yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not worried about him. I think that he'll be fine. By the way, the Tampa Bay Rays are playing at George Steinbrenner Field, which is the Yankees spring training field. So that's where Tampa's playing. I wasn't aware of that. So that there's no dome there, obviously. So that's why the weather, I guess, got in the way. Either way, all that being said, for Garrett Crochet, I'll be interested in his next time around in the rotation. We got Tanner Houck tomorrow. I'm very interested in seeing what he looks like. And then next game after that, Walker Buehler's first game, I think, is going to be a very, very interesting one as well. Walker Buehler, who, you know, kind of the forgotten man of the offseason in a weird way. Like, he's a starting pitcher who was picked up. And when people talk about this offseason, they barely even talk about him. Isn't that weird? Like, they barely even mention him. You know, Buehler, I think, could be a major X factor this year. Major. And with the way that it all happened, like, he missed most of last season with a hip injury. He missed the year before that. And when he came back to the Dodgers in August from the hip injury, he couldn't do anything. Like, he really struggled for a couple of those starts and early on in the playoffs. And then he just found it in the World Series. Of all the times to find it, he got it back in the World Series and was great. 5 scoreless innings in Game 3. And then in the 9th inning, he got his first career save and locked down the World Series for the Dodgers. So that's what he's coming off of. I can't wait to see what he looks like here. I thought he looked good in the spring. He's got a huge arsenal of pitches, and he was using all of them. So I thought all of that was very promising. We'll see tomorrow as Tanner Houck and Jack Leiter will be the pitching matchup. It's an 8:05 first pitch with a 7:05 start to the Mass Mutual pregame show, which is with yours truly right here, Christian Arcand. I'll be here with you for that, and can't wait. It's going to be a fun season, folks. I'm excited for this season. I was excited going into it. I'm even more excited now. That was an exciting win. And you can thank Willie Abreu for that. All right, for Brian Frazoco and also Joe Braverman, I'm Christian Arcand. This has been Red Sox Review. We now join BYU and Alabama live at the Prudential Center in New Jersey. This game already in progress here in the Sweet 16. Back tomorrow at 7:05. Well, I'll be here at 6:05 for an hour. And then we have the pregame show at 7:05 right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Good night.
You've kind of gotten it all on opening day here on Jones and Keefe.
What a day. What a time.
Dong pool draft is in the books.
Yep.
MLB season predictions are in the books. Even got a Ruby De La Rosa mention.
Why not?
Lots of good stuff going on here today on Jones and Keefe. Random baseball player returns in the grab bag. People excited for that.
People are excited.
We will preview the Red Sox season in just 60 seconds. Keefe will give you a 60-second preview. I'll give you a 60-second preview when we go on the clock at high noon. And joining us right now for his weekly visit with Jones and Keefe is Rob Bradford of WEEI and the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, a friend of Tyler O'Neill.
That's right.
He's brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com, by the E.L. Harvey companies, including Nauset Disposal and Mega Disposal, your local trash collection and recycling providers, and by Aviva Trattoria, Italian-inspired, locally made from fresh, whole, locally sourced ingredients. Rob Bradford, how you doing on opening day?
Oh, McFarland. All it's missing is an Alan Webster reference, right?
Yeah,
if you're
going
to have
nice.
Ruby De La Rosa, you have to get an Alan Webster reference. Yeah, so happy opening day. It just hits different, doesn't it?
It does.
Really,
it really, really, really does hit different. People are bullish on the Red Sox, ESPN, MLB.com, Keith's nemesis Keith Law. Do you think people are it's getting away from them a little bit on the Red Sox? Three of us on this show have them in the World Series. Billy has them winning it. We all have them winning the division. Like, has it gotten a little carried away?
Alex Bregman's going to hit a home run today, according to Rich Heath.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah, that's a good bet.
It's all coming together. It's all coming together. Yeah, I mean, I think that by the way they've landed in spring training, because in part because all these other teams have had so many things go bad poorly, and the Red Sox have had just enough stuff not go poorly, I think it has worked out for them, and that's where they've landed. I mean, I think I don't think it's unreasonable to think they're going to win this division off of what talent they have right now.
And I think one of the main reasons people are picking them is the guy starting today, Garrett Crochet. And do you think the contract thing is going to be an issue at times this year, or are they going to really be able to sort of put it to the side and just have him go out and pitch all year?
Yeah, I mean, as you guys know, today was D-Day. He's not talking beyond once today starts, so we assume that they're not talking. I mean, as we saw with Alex Cora, that changed last year. It can always change. But I think the biggest thing is that he's got another year, right? So he's got another year. He's got this year to prove himself, to prove that he's right in holding out or to going for the big-ticket item when it comes to the contract. And then you know, the fact is that maybe he gets through this year and they pay more. But as we said before, I think it's – oh, look at this. You hear my GPS?
We absolutely hear it, yeah.
I'm headed to the park, so –
Nice. Do you need directions there? Have you never been?
Well, no, not from this location.
Got it.
But I think the fact is that both sides, we know the motivation with this is, and both sides, it's a little bit off the beaten track. You have a situation with the Red Sox. They can hold out and they can see if it's worth paying more money. And for Garrett Crochet, he can hold out and say, hey, you know what? I want to be the biggest contract in all of pitching in baseball. So this doesn't surprise me we've gotten to this point.
I want to ask you about another pitcher the Red Sox were in on this offseason. You tweeted yesterday, according to a source, Nathan Eovaldi's decision this offseason came down to the Red Sox and the Rangers. There were six legit suitors. I'm curious, if he chose the Red Sox, would they still have been in on Walker Buehler? Would they still have been in on Garrett Crochet? If Eovaldi chose the Red Sox, how would that have changed their approach?
I think it was the Buehler spot, not the Crochet spot. And if you look at it, it sort of fills the same bucket, right? The veteran guy, the guy who they know isn't going to wilt in the postseason, the guy who is going to be a good influence in the clubhouse. Like, all those boxes are checked. But, you know, according to what I heard yesterday, that it really did come down to the Red Sox and Rangers. There were six legitimate teams interested, and it begs the question, you know, which would you rather have, Eovaldi or Buehler? I think it's a pretty good debate, but I can see why. and that's why he got his deal, right? That's why he got his 3-year deal with the Rangers. I'm sure that's put him over the top. But I think that you could see what they were going for, and I like the fact that they were identifying those sort of guys. I like the fact that they were identifying Eovaldi, because it shows you they're not obsessed. Remember the John Henry, you can't be 30 years old and give a guy a contract. They're not obsessed with that. They're obsessed with, okay, this guy can be good in the clubhouse. He's a good pitcher. he can help us win a postseason game, and that's what Eovaldi can do.
Yeah, we heard Alex Cora yesterday talking about Devers is the DH and Bregman is the third baseman. That's sort of been the chatter over the last couple of weeks, and whether Devers loves it or not, that's sort of the reality. I guess the next layer down from that is last year's DH was Masataka Yoshida. What do you think ends up happening with him?
I would love to tell you that we've done the Venn diagrams. We've done the, like, the beautiful mind in the window, and we're trying to figure this out. And it is just, there's no path for Masa Yoshida to be an integral part of this team if Rafael Devers is where he is right now, which we assume he is. He's going to be the everyday DH. They can talk all they want about Masa Yoshida is going to get his arm back. He's going to be throwing. He's going to be in the field. Well, you know, there's a reason why he didn't play in the field at all last year with what a perceived fine arm. And that's because they don't think he can field. They want a good defensive team. And so every time that they say something nice about Masa Yoshida, that I'm just thinking they're screaming and yelling to these other teams in Major League Baseball. I will say this. He looks good, Mike. He looks good hitting. Like, I think he's a legitimate hitter. He could be a DH for someone. He just, for this team, because of the guy sitting in the DH position, I just don't think it's with the Red Sox.
Rob Bradford, WEEI.com, and the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast joining us here, as he does every Thursday on Jones and Keefe, here on opening day on WEEI. You mentioned how Yoshida looks this spring. I know it's been limited looks at Rafael Devers. How would you say he looks?
He's okay. I mean, the times I've seen him play, and, you know, like, listen, his conditioning is what it is. It's, you're going to see him. I think you have seen him. I think he ran down, and after I talked to you guys and took a video of him. You know, he's big, but he's not like Sandoval big. And I'm not talking Patrick Sandoval. I'm talking Pablo, of course. And he hits. And he's hit in spring training. The thing is that I would be a couple things I'd be a little wary of when it comes to Devers is that he got so few at bats in spring training, and he can hit in the backfield, an off-deck machine, and all that stuff. It's baffling to me why he didn't get in more games, because games are games. That's what spring trainings are for. And the other thing is that how is he going to handle this DH thing? And I talked to him the other day, said, I'm just going to do my thing. I'm not going to change anything. I haven't asked advice from anybody, JD Martinez or David Ortiz or anything. But you don't know till you get there. Like, you don't know what it's like to – he's only DH 20. He started 20 games as a DH. So all these things, he might just come out and just start raking right away. But these are some of the things that if he doesn't rake – then we're going to point to and say, well, that wasn't right, and they should have adjusted it.
Is there a way for Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer to be up with the big club outside of injury to somebody in front of them?
Yeah, I mean, if someone stinks, I mean, if Abreu stinks, if Abreu isn't good, then and he really, really struggles, kind of like he did last year at the beginning of the year, and they're like, hey, you know what? You know, you need more time in the minors or whatever it is, and Roman Anthony is tearing it up, then sure. I think for Marcelo Meyer, it's more of, it just comes down to, is Trevor Story or Bregman healthy? Those are the two spots that he can play. If they are healthy and they are producing, or not even if they're producing, if they're healthy, then he's going to stay in the minor leagues for now. It's still, guys, it is still baffling to me. I love spring training. You know, I love the chicken wings. I love the beach. Mm-hmm. I love it all. And so, but of all my time in spring training, one of the most baffling things was that day Marcelo Meyer. I think I talked to you guys the day after. Meyer playing second base. I mean, we did the podcast with Breslow. I sat down with him, and I said, okay, you got to answer this for me. And he goes on about how you're in the right to be in the competition and blah, blah, blah. And I said, but it was a day. It was a day. And he didn't really have a response to it. It was weird. And yet, because that sort of him being in the competition came and went within a day. But he was, I think, by far the best guy of those three guys in spring training.
Well, yeah, so speaking of that, I get your point on, you know, if Willie Abreu really struggles, maybe that's where Roman Anthony comes up. I didn't never consider Marcelo Meyer playing second base either. And so what if Christian Campbell gets off to a really slow start? And obviously he is hopefully the future of that position, and you don't want to run away from him too soon, but if it's a long, prolonged slump to start the year, and Marcelo Meyer is killing it at Worcester, even though he's doing it at shortstop, would there be any kind of thought of having him come up and take Campbell's spot?
I think they would be very hesitant to do it. They could do it, obviously, but you have to go through a lot of other checklists, right? You have to go through David Hamilton. You have to go through Vaughn Grissom, who's going to be playing second base in Worcester. And if neither one of those guys are impressing, And so if neither one of those guys are impressing, then, yeah, make the move. But the thing is that they want him, they want Marcelo Meyer as a fail-safe at shortstop. And Trevor Story has had a bad back the last, you know, couple weeks.
No.
That's a reminder. That's a reminder that you might need Marcelo Meyer at shortstop. So I'm not going to say no, but right now, you know, this is we're looking at if we do the Dustin Pedroia 2007 thing all over again, then David Hamilton would play the role of Alex Cora and get him and get Pedroia to the finish line or get Campbell to the finish line. I don't think Marcelo Meyer would be.
I was listening to Cora yesterday on WEEI Afternoons with Hart and Fitzy, and he gave what I thought an interesting answer about Tristan Casas. He was asked about Breslow's projections for him, 40 and 110 or whatever, and Cora's like, the guy's just got to play. Like, he's got to be out there. He's got to play. 150 games is the number, and if he plays that, the rest will take care of itself. I sensed a little Casas fatigue in that answer. Is he already a little worn out by the Tristan Casas experience, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
I think it's cut and dry, not only with Cora, I think with basically everyone that follows the Red Sox. If he produces, great. You've got a great personality. He's a great teammate. You know, he's different, sure, but he's producing. But if you don't produce, then all this other stuff is like, it becomes a little less palatable, right? So I think that Alex Cora is saying the obvious. We need this guy to produce. And for the team, but also just for the perception of Tristan Casas. I think I said it to you guys before. I don't know if there's a more polarizing athlete in Boston right now than Tristan Casas. I don't know. But that's why sort of this April is so important to him, to sort of get that narrative back on track, not only with Cora, but with everybody.
All right, so let's play this out. If Garrett Crochet goes 6 innings today and leaves the game with a lead, what is the ideal 7-8-9 for the bullpen?
Ooh, I love it. Yep. Let's go back to 2013 when Koji, Andrew Miller, who was it? Andrew Bailey, was he in there? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, might have been. Yes. Yeah.
So Tozawa, it was Koji, Andrew Miller.
Ruby De La Rosa.
Someone else is in there. Yeah, Ruby De La Rosa. Andrew, yeah. Alan Webster came in throwing a 99 and everyone freaked out. I think that you're going to have, here's my guess. As I said, I really like what Whitlock has been doing. No question about it. I think Whitlock gets in there. I think Slayton gets in there. If you, the first lefty probably maybe is Justin Miller. And then you have Chapman at the end. I don't know if they throw Hendricks out there today. I think, it just seems like he's still working his way back, you know? So it hasn't been terrible, but it hasn't been the type of level that you say, oh, there's a high leverage guy. So, you know, I think in an ideal world, you sort of ease him back into things. But right now, I love a good power ranking. If you get a power rank who looked the best in spring training of relievers, it was Chapman, it was Whitlock, it was Slayton.
Is it fair to say it is kind of bullpen by committee? Cora gave an answer the other day where he's like, well, Chapman's been the best guy, but if Corey Seager's up in the eighth inning, he's going to come in the eighth. I mean, is it fair to say this is bullpen by committee?
Yeah, I mean, that's how baseball is right now, but you better have the guy who can come back in the ninth,
like,
right?
They weren't like that last year with Jans. Oh, I see what you're saying. Matching up beforehand and then, right.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's almost all bullpens have two guys now, right? So it's like the Yankees, they have Luke Weaver and Devin Williams. Like, you have these guys, but, you know, I think that ideally, but I will say this, Cora has said, like, he likes certainty. He likes routine. So why he said he might bring him in the eighth, I would think that he wouldn't want to wait for the ninth. And how long that dynamic lasts, it really depends on how many times you're going to go with watching Aroldis Chapman walk three guys before striking out the first. Because, you know, this is – he looks good, but, you know, he has a track record of not throwing strikes.
Last thing for you, Bradfoe. This ended up being a pretty spirited debate last week on the show. Is the catcher a part of the infield?
Yes.
Is he?
Yeah.
Catcher.
He's not part of the outfield.
Yeah, okay.
That was my response. Catcher's an infielder.
But he is part of the battery. He's not an infield. A catcher's not an infielder.
No, don't sway him. He already said yes.
Can you do both?
But I you asked it in a misleading way, I feel like. Is a catcher an infielder?
All right, maybe I didn't ask it right, but I got the answer.
Is outfielders part of the lineup? Yeah, you can be both.
You can be both. So it's like, they're in the lineup.
Yeah, I would.
This is
why baseball's so great. Yay, baseball.
Baseball's never boring with conversations like this.
No, it isn't.
All right, Bradfo, we appreciate it, even with your wrong answer. We'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next week.
As I said, it's your prerogative to be wrong. So there you go.
I am used to that. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy opening day.
All right, thanks, guys. See you. All right,
Bradfo, joining us here every Thursday.
Listening to WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
Two down, bottom nine, 12-8 Red Sox in Monterey. A pop-up should end it into shallow left field. Sogard calling off Eaton. He is there to make the play. Ball game over, spring training over. The Red Sox put on a show in Monterey. 12-8 the final. The kids did it all today. The Texas Rangers are next.
That was the final call last night. Red Sox exhibition game action. Closing out the spring before heading to Texas for tomorrow's season opener against the Rangers. Fitzy, they say there's no such thing as a dumb question, so I'm going to ask it.
Okay, go right. By the way, did you see who the Red Sox are opening against tomorrow?
The Rangers?
No, old pal Nate Eovaldi.
Oh, yeah, it's Eovaldi versus Crochet. Yeah.
That's freaking great theater for March 27th, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care who they're facing. It's going to be about Crochet for me. Crochet to go six innings. I want Crochet to have 13 Ks, and he gets
stop. I'm going to need a wet nap and a cigarette.
Throws it to the pen, and then they blow the lead, and they're 0-1.
It's 4-3 Rangers in my mind, but I am going to love when he leaves the game up 3-1.
Yes, and that would be my lone real concern for this this baseball season. But what I was going to say, is Monterey Jack Cheese from Monterey, Mexico?
I don't know that offhand.
I
was going to Google, if you wouldn't mind doing radio for
guys,
a while.
No, I'm going to guess bad it's from radio.
No, because it's not like any of the quesos that I'm familiar with in Mexico, so I'm going to guess it's from Monterey, California.
Oh, okay. No, I was just, wondering, because sometimes I put Monterey Jack on a taco.
Actually, I believe it was named after the cowboy Monterey Jack.
I really wish Alex Cora would call. No, we are prepared for situations like this. I actually had Dan Ball get together some projections for the season earlier last week, I guess. And we wanted to get some of these underway. Because, Fitzy, if you remember when we talked about that stupid projection by Baseball Reference that Crochet was going to pitch like four games and win nothing.
Oh, my God. They had him winning six games,
yeah,
Andy.
It was stupid.
And by the way, real quick, Thank God we live in a day and age where you can get an answer to any question in 2 seconds or less. Monterey Jack Cheese, named for David Jacks, a businessman who was one of the first to widely sell and distribute the cheese in the late 1800s, which was from the Monterey Alta, California neighborhood.
Oh, okay. So it is a Californian cheese from our friend Jack, who got the idea to sell it. What a wise businessman he was. Anyway, Dan Ball. Let's get to some of your projections that you've dug up. So,
nailed it.
There much it like we do in this world when we don't like the information a certain source gives us, we look for a different source. So we didn't like Baseball References projections. Where did you get these?
This is from FanGraphs.
Okay.
So specifically, it's an acronym ZIPS with two I's. I don't know what it translates to, but it's full blown projections for the season.
Like
so,
George Zip?
I bet it's player projections on the back end.
Probably, but...
What starts with a Z?
I'm going to have to let you get back to your segment because we have something that's about to come through the phone line in just one moment. I'll give you the Crochet number real quick.
Okay.
He is projected from this model 12-6, 2.93 ERA in 29 games started this season.
Okay, much better than what we saw. Joining us on the phone lines now is the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. Alex Cora is brought to you on WEEI Afternoons by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Alex Cora, appreciate you joining us. Andy Hart here alongside Nick Fitzy Stevens. Are you excited for the baseball season to get underway tomorrow?
Yes, sir. I think
you know, the off season, we executed what we wanted to. You know, spring training was solid. I think the two games in Monterrey were awesome. Kind of like change of pace, you know, like, you know, getting out of the routine. And now we're here in Dallas, you know, ready to go.
Yeah, Alex, the excitement here in our studio at the station and throughout Red Sox Nation has been palpable the last couple of months. And I think it's because of the offseason that the Red Sox have had, and the optimism continues to grow. So I just wanted to ask you, what did it mean to you to see the front office be so proactive and aggressive this offseason, addressing the needs of defense, a starter like Crochet, and so much more for you?
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot. You know, I made a commitment with the organization halfway through the season last year after talking to John, Tom, Mike, and Bress, you know, that we were going for it, right? As an organization, we did a good job. Not like, you know, developing players and getting better the last few years. And we executed, like I said before. We got some guys in that room. They're proven winners. You know, Crochet obviously comes from a tough situation last year, but we know the talent. But you talk about Walker, you talk about Alex, and all they know is playing October baseball, right, and be successful. So we're in a good spot. It's you know, just being in spring training, it was a different vibe. Even being in the city in January up there, you know, when we were recruiting Alex, you know, I was telling him that, you know, the talk of the town was him, right? Like, everybody was talking about Alex Bregman, and I'm glad that he's with us. So it's a little bit different than the last 3 or 4 years, and now it's time for us to go out there and perform.
I think a big part of the buzz is the obvious trade for Garrett Crochet. We've lived in this town, Pedro and Schilling and Josh Beckett, aces, what they mean to a baseball team. Do you think Garrett Crochet is ready for that ace workload? I mean, he didn't start his first major league game until last year, and now he's the opening day starter with a lot of expectations for a World Series contender. So is he ready for that job?
I mean, we're about to see, but physically he is. This guy is a monster. You know, he's big and strong, and you know, the way he goes about his business in the training room, in the weight room, is ace-like, right? But now, obviously, we got to go out there every 5 days and prove it. We're going to let him go. That's, you know, the expectations are 30-plus starts and help us, you know, win as many games as possible. And I truly believe physically he's different than others. You know, I joke with Sal about that. I compare him with Sal, but he's stronger, right? And Chris actually agree with that, but you'll see him. You know, he's ready to go, and it doesn't matter. We have to be smart about it too. You know, the way the season starts, there's a lot of games early on. Then the schedule actually benefits us from June, July, and August. So we'll take care of him, and if we do that, he's going to take care of us.
Alex, obviously so much has been made, like you said, in a positive way about Alex Bregman coming to town. He's already a hero here, and he hasn't even swung the bat yet in a Red Sox uniform.
At St. Bregman, we call him.
St. We're calling him St. Bregman. Like, the man can he turns water into beer at Fenway. Like, we're expecting great things this year. But, you know, obviously looks like he'll be the starting third baseman for the team. So Raffy moves to DH, and I just wanted to know, you know, where things are with Raffy heading into the season. We know where he's going to be in the lineup, but where is he in the best place he can possibly be in his head right now to be successful? Because when he's going right, there may be no better left-handed bat in the AL.
I believe so. We had conversations throughout spring training, and, you know, he was very vocal about how he felt. And, you know, we made a decision. Alex is going to play third. Raffy's going to DH. And we all are in the winning business, and he understands that. You know, it's like everything, right? You don't have to agree with it, you know, but at the end of the day, what are we going to do to go out there and perform every single day? And he's been working hard, not only with his swing, but the routine, of course. You know, it's a little bit different. You know, but somebody mentioned, can he do it? You know, like, you know what? Every DH used to be a position player until there were DHs, right? JD went through the same transition. In 2018, he was an outfielder. He became a DH, and you saw what happened. So we expect the same thing. The kid is ready to go. He's going to hit second against lefties and righties, and he's going to DH. And I think having Alex behind him is going to benefit him. And, you know, honestly, I expect a great season from Raffy offensively.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora joining us here on WEEI Afternoons, as he will all season long on Wednesday afternoons. Alex, you've been in the media. You know how this job works. You've been in Boston for a long time. We can talk about all the positives and the upsides and blow smoke up your butt here. If I were being honest with you, I think the biggest question mark might be the bullpen. You know, we had an idea who we thought the closer might be, and now it seems like that plan has changed. What do you think of the closer situation, and is that a concern for you?
No, I think, you know, the way Chapman has thrown the ball, he earned it, right? But at the same time, we're not going to pin ourselves in certain series, right? Especially the first two, you know, Texas and Baltimore, you know, they're left-handed hitters. So if there's a pocket in the eighth that is Seager, you're going to see Chapman there. I don't know the situation with Baltimore, but, you know, if Henderson is leading out the eighth, you're going to see Chapman. But most of the time, he's going to pitch the ninth. We have to figure a few things out. We need consistency from some other guys, right? We try to, you know, address that throughout the offseason. Having Whitlock helps. Obviously, Slayton healthy is going to help. Justin Wilson is a good pitcher. He can get lefties and righties out. But, you know, the Kellys and Weiser, they need to do the job, because you cannot only rely on your on Slayton and Chapman and Wilson, right? There's going to be days that they're going to have to pitch the seventh and the eighth, and we expect them to perform. You know, I think that was something that happened last year, right? Like, if you look at our stats or our season, you know, we blew 30-plus saves, and it's not in the ninth, only in the ninth, right? It's from the sixth inning on, and we have to be better in that aspect.
Obviously, excitement for the guys that were with the team, guys that have recently joined the team, and what about the guys that soon may join the team? What do you think are, like, realistic expectations in 2025 for the mighty rookie triumvirate? You got one making the club in Christian Campbell, and then you have Marcelo Meyer swinging a bat the last couple of nights and all spring long, Alex, just like he's itching to get up there, and Roman Anthony's no slouch either. So how are we going to handle this situation?
As you guys know, and this is the way I made it to the big leagues, right? People got hurt and hurt and hurt, and they're like, Alex, you're going to the big leagues, you know? It's not that I earned it. It was just by default, right? With them, they're going to let us know, to be honest with you. You saw what happened in Monterey, just the stage, 22,000 people, and especially in the case of Marcelo, right? Like, I mean, I was joking with people. I was like, in the beginning, the Mexican kids were calling him Marcelo. At the end, it was like, Marcelo, you know, like he said, oh, he's Mexican, actually. But the at-bats are getting better, and the defense is real. With Roman, I don't know how many walks he took in Mexico, but it's a professional bat, quote-unquote. You know, I know it's a cliche, but it's really a good one. So they go to Worcester. We talked to them over the course of the week. You know, they feel they're ready, but there's a few things that obviously – you know, they got to go down there and the roster, right? Like, we have a pretty good big league roster, but it's going to be a case of when, right? And they're going to contribute. They're going to play hard. They're going to do everything right. They're going to perform. And at one point during the season, I truly believe they're going to help us win ballgames at the big league level.
Clearly a big part of the top of your order is Tristan Casas. Kind of had the lost season with the injury a year ago. And then Craig Breslow opened some eyes when he threw numbers out there, projections of Casas being a 40 home run, 120 RBI guy. You're laughing, but are those pie in the sky numbers, or is that something we as fans should say, yeah, that's attainable, we should pencil that in?
We need him to play, right? We need him to keep him healthy. That's the most important thing. Throughout his career, he's been hurt, you know, and he's been off the field. So the more he plays, the better he's going to be. I truly believe that spot, that pocket in the lineup is going to be a good one. Bregman, Casas, you know, we're going to let Jaron do his thing, Rafi do his thing. Alex and Tristan, they're going to slow down the game, right? They're going to take pitches. They're going to take their walks, and that's very important. Numbers-wise, man, 40 and 120 sounds great, you know, but I think 150 games from him, that's what I want. The rest of the thing, he'll take care of that.
And Alex, you know, it's interesting to see that the Patriots and the Red Sox are both so active in the offseason, trying to get back to where they were, both teams winning championships in 2018. I wanted to ask, any relationship with Mike Vrabel? Obviously, you were on the Red Sox around the same time that he was on the Patriots playing for Super Bowls, winning World Series. I know you have had relationships with previous coaches and GM, so what's the vibe like with Vrabel?
No, not yet, but I think everybody in the city, right, they like what they're doing. For what I know, very professional, very specific in his job, right? You know, I joke around, Brad and Joe have put pressure on us now. You know, like, they have probably the best basketball team in the league, you know, and they're putting pressure on the Red Sox and the Patriots and everybody else to step up and do the things that they've been doing the last few years.
Before I let you go and you get the marathon season underway, when I ask you to look around the American League East and the American League overall, what do you see? What's the landscape look like?
It's really good. You know, they have the pitching offensively with Santander. You have Bo, you got Vladdy, you got Santander. That's a different lineup than last year. Obviously, we know what Baltimore can do. The Rays in a different environment. You know, Yandy Diaz is going to have a monster season hitting the ball to right field in that stadium. You know, that's how he lives. So it's going to be a grind from day one. Detroit has a really good team. We saw them in spring training, and obviously, you know, their third base coach is the greatest ever, you know? So, I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. It's going to be very tough, but we're ready for the challenge. We have a pretty good baseball team. We just have to take care of the ball. I think that's the most important thing. We play good defense. We're going to play meaningful games in September.
All right, Alex, we're looking forward to tomorrow, opening day, getting the season underway, and we're looking forward to every Wednesday and talking to you about this season that has as much buzz as we can remember in half a decade around here. So good luck tomorrow. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one. Enjoy.
Thank you. You too,
thanks, Alex. That was Red Sox manager Alex Cora here on WEEI Afternoons. Up next, Ted Johnson in the house, 3-point stance time, and we'll talk about some of the things that Alex Cora said. All next in hour number two, WEEI Afternoons.
Five first pitch on the Shaw's and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network and on the Odyssey app. And the first front office report of this season is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by findmassmoney.gov. And it is the president of the Boston Red Sox, Sam Kennedy, who joins us this morning. Hey, Sam.
Good morning, guys. Greetings from Dallas. How are you?
We're doing great, and you'll probably say every season, but when it comes to anticipation and expectation with what happened in the off season, where do you rank heading into today during the time you've been here?
Well, there's probably recency bias, but I don't remember as much anticipation and excitement for a while. It's been a really, really long off season, very productive one. We had a team event last night. We were just talking about how ready everyone is to go and can't wait to get to the ballpark today.
Sam, obviously everybody very excited about Garrett Crochet, and I know you've said to other media outlets that you're not going to talk about negotiations for extensions leading into the season, but when you look at your pitching rotation, and you've got him, obviously, but then you've got Buehler, who has his first year back from a second Tommy John, and then you have three starters that are starting on IR. You guys have dealt with bad injuries the last two seasons, and that's kind of been the fall off for you. Is there an emphasis going into this season to make sure that history isn't repeating itself, that you guys have people healthy, and what are some of the things that you are making sure that your players are doing to keep everyone healthy?
Yeah, it's the most important part of the game is health and availability, and everybody deals with injuries, so we can't use that as an excuse. It has plagued us over the last couple of years. We're really glad Garrett's ready to take the ball today, and he's going to anchor, we hope, a rotation that is built to last throughout the course of the year. But we did make a lot of moves in this offseason in terms internal and external. So we hope that we have more depth, both in the starting pitching rotation, but also in the bullpen. It is a challenge that our medical and training staff work on tirelessly to make sure everybody can go out and take the ball when we need them.
I wasn't clear from his statement. Did he specifically say, hey, once opening day gets here, don't want to talk about a new deal? Or is it something that you guys can have an ongoing discussion about?
You know, there's not going to discuss any negotiations that are happening in private or discussions. There's no baseball MLB rule or deadline, but we will follow Garrett's lead in terms of the desire to have conversations, given the nature where he's here. He's like I said, anchoring our rotation, and any discussions about what happens 2-3 years from now, we'll keep private.
Alex Cora on this radio station yesterday afternoon talked about Rafael Devers and accepting that he's going to DH for this team. We all got to hear his passion about playing third base. How involved and even difficult was it to get him to kind of come to terms with what Alex Cora thought should be his role?
You know, he's doing exactly what you would want him to do, which is doing what's best for the team. And he's, as I've said a few times, he's the only guy in that clubhouse wearing a uniform as a player that's got that World Series ring on his shelf. So he's a championship caliber player. He's the cornerstone of our franchise. He's invested in winning as much as anybody else, and he's going to contribute however he can to our plans. You definitely want players that want to be where they want to be on the field. But in the end, Rafi understands the conversations that he's had with Alex. We've left it to those two guys. That's the right level to have those conversations. And he's ready to go and excited for opening day, just like the rest of us.
Sam, I know you don't get into specific with players in their contract, but what's it like to balance knowing that, you know, just any player, but knowing that you have somebody who could be really, really good in the future that you might be trying to figure out what their deal is going to be worth then and trying to get something done now because maybe the money's going to be a little bit different? Like, what's that like from a front office perspective to know that we're trying to get something done now with a specific player, but that price tag might go up? Even though it's a good thing, it might go up a lot more than we expect.
Yeah, it's a great question, Wiggy, because the hardest thing in professional sports is to balance those two sort of misaligned things, which are near term and long term. And our responsibility in the ownership group and in the front office is to be doing everything we can to win now, win today's game, you know, here this afternoon in Dallas, and also win in 2030, 2032 and beyond. So you're always trying to balance the near term with the long term. And it's really, really difficult and challenging. If you look back over, this will be my 24th opening day with the Red Sox, we've had lots of ups and downs, and I think that's representative of where you've had some great near-term success and then near-term failures. It goes with the territory. But what we try to do is balance both each and every day as we're addressing our roster to make sure we've got the perfect balance. As Red Sox fans know, our young homegrown players that come up through the organization and can ultimately contribute at the big league level, international signings. We've had a lot of success in that area. And then big free agent signings. And so that combination is really the ingredients that you want for championship baseball. And hopefully we'll get there this year and in 2025, but also beyond.
Sam, I'm not sure. You said you're in Texas, so unlikely you were listening before you came on, but we were all accused of being Red Sox honks and apologists. So I just hope if you missed it,
hold on. Hold on. The world is turning on in a different direction on its axis. Red Sox apologists on WEEI. You got to be kidding me. Yeah. Who said that?
It's a wild world.
No, guys read too much social media. You read too much social media. I'd advise you guys to get off social media.
Oh, it would be great for all of our health.
Chad felt like I was not hard enough on Will Middlebrooks,
right,
for the construction of this team. For the construction of this team over the last 4 years,
it was all his fault. Sam, we spoke all last year, and prior to last year, we discussed, you know, the roster construction and everything. And you had mentioned that it's a break-even business, the baseball component of it. And Forbes has a list that came out, I think, yesterday with the valuations of the franchises. The Red Sox just under $5 billion as the third most valuable franchise in Major League Baseball. And they note that the operating income of the Boston Red Sox was $120 million last year, which put the Red Sox as the best, most profitable in Major League Baseball. Is that number accurate? And what does that signify to you?
I can assure you that number is inaccurate, number one. Number two, I can assure you of that. But it wouldn't serve the Boston Red Sox or me well to get into a debate or a discussion publicly about our finances. Here's what I'll tell you. This ownership group has consistently demonstrated a willingness to invest in all areas of the franchise, from preserving and protecting Fenway Park to investing in player payroll, to investing in minor league, our minor league affiliates, our spring training affiliates. The resources have not been a problem. Have we made mistakes in terms of where we've invested in the past? Yeah, of course we have. But really excited about where we are for 2025. And I think our fans care about who's putting on the uniforms today and going out there versus the business side of the game. So I'll leave it at that.
First season in a long time that there will be baseball on the radio and on the Odyssey app without Joe Castiglione. But we just had Will Middlebrooks on, and so it's going to be Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks, and I think we can share Lou Merlone doing some games and Sean McDonough, right, Sam?
Yeah, that's right. I think we'll probably have the only name that was left out. I think we'll probably have Mike Monaco doing some games as well. 162 is a grind, and there's only one Joe Castiglione, so it takes six or seven guys to fill his shoes. We all know that.
Let me bat clean up, if I could, Curtis, to use an apropos analogy on a couple things from last year. Still no spicy mustard, and I don't know. I don't know what's the deal on that.
We got to get Greg. Let's call Troop together after this call. We'll get on that.
Okay. All right. What about the Curtis first pitch?
Are we
shut out on that? Or can we try to make that happen this season?
Definitely shut out on that. Definitely shut out on that.
Unbelievable.
People tell me I have to be better at saying no. So the answer is that's a hard no.
And just to clear up the cocoa bomb. Was there any interest at any time from you, Sam Kennedy,
ask,
in buying the Boston Celtics? That was a cocoa bomb at one point.
We are focused on the Boston Red Sox.
It's not
excited about excited about Bill Chisholm. I'll just say it's a small world. There's a lot of connections to Bill. I think Celtics fans are going to love this guy. It's exciting. Think about a homegrown kid who grew up here loving the Celtics, and now he's going to eventually be the owner of the team. I actually spoke to Wick the other day. He's gave me a little bit more background on him. It's really exciting and fantastic. What a great job Wick has done in terms of the championships. And
yeah,
we've been involved with the Red Sox as long as Wick has been involved with the Celtics. And Wick's been such a great part of this era in Boston sports, and he was really focused on getting it in the right hands, and it sounds like he has. So that's really exciting for Celtics fans.
Sam, not numbers wise in terms of profit or loss, but it has felt for us since being down in Fort Myers that there has been a renewed interest in the team after the offseason. Have you noticed that in ticket sales as a general rule?
Yeah, there's been a hugely positive reaction. I think anytime you add two top of the rotation starters and a Gold Glove caliber player in Alex Bregman, a lot of interest and excitement. But you know, Chris, on a serious note, you know as much about the Red Sox as anybody. I do think there's also a reaction to this young core group of guys who, you know, Christian's going to be in the lineup today, which is amazing just to think about that. You know, last year was his first camp. And, you know, before that he was at Georgia Tech, and I think he played at Georgia Tech for exactly 1 year. It's pretty extraordinary. And yeah, there's nothing like young homegrown players to get our fans excited. So there's a lot of excitement around the short-term prospects for the Sox, which is just great.
Sam, when you look at this team, I think over the past couple of years, you guys seem like you're always top 10, top 5 in most major hitting categories. It's been the rotation. You talked about adding some of these pieces. How involved has Craig Breslow been and just the coaching staff when it comes to pitching and the excitement around the pieces that you added and what this rotation could potentially do this year, especially when you get some key guys back from injuries?
Yeah, look, I mean, huge credit to Brez, who one of the first things he did is went out and convinced Andrew Bailey to stay away from the New York Yankees and get him to the Red Sox. You know, Andrew's a New Yorker, and that's his hometown team, and getting him here was a huge thing for us. He's done a great job revamping our entire pitching program from all the way down in rookie ball up through the big leagues, taking a player development focus that doesn't stop when guys get to Fenway Park and continuing that growth and development. Andrew has led that effort. He's done a great job. And Brez, if there's anything this guy knows, it's pitching. Literally willed himself to become a major league pitcher. When you look at Brez, he doesn't exactly look like a big leaguer. And this guy made himself a quality major league reliever, played for 13 years. That was something we, frankly, forever in our time in Boston, we've not had a great track record of drafting, developing, pitching, and that's something that we're working really hard on. And we have a long way to go, but there's a lot of good signs in camp and throughout the minor leagues on that front. So excited to see what comes through the farm.
Well, it is exciting, Sam. Thanks for taking the time on opening day, and we will talk to you again throughout the season, but go get them.
Look forward to it, guys. Thanks so much. Enjoy today.
All right, that is Sam Kennedy, and First Pitch 4:05 today here on the Shaws and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network.
Wasn't a no.
Hey, you're right about that. Wasn't
it was
a no.
Not.
There you go.
It was. We're focused on the Red Sox.
It was a deflection.
Courtney's right. It was a deflection.
Yeah. It was not.
That was not a no.
Right. A hard no on the first pitch, my God.
I know, that was nice, a no. That was a no.
That is disappointing, Curtis.
Yeah, that's a Linda call. That's not that's over.
I would really love to see. I hope I live to see you throw the first pitch at Fenway Park.
Can you imagine how nervous you would be?
Yeah. What, Curtis?
Like the foot tapping would be.
Through the roof.
The man, he's a ball player.
I know.
Through and through.
I agree.
Everybody on this show has doubted my athletic ability and then been forced to say that they were wrong.
I'm not doubting your athletic ability. I've seen you
from
when you're
pickleball to golf.
Yeah,
you named the white guy sport. I taught him.
Well, you were good in pickleball. He was dominant.
Yeah, he was great in golf. Yeah.
Really good in golf.
Last year's Numbnuts Invitational
and bowling.
Bowling. I mean, you talk about an irrelevant sport that you get nothing for being good at.
Yeah,
but his
foot went up ick style at the end of bowling.
It's no comment.
At least I didn't. Jeez, the amount of personal attacks. At least I didn't hold my nose while bowling.
Have we set a date yet? Because we're talking about golf for the match. Because there's been a lot of interest on the match.
In the match?
Yeah, and whether or not there's going to be fans allowed there, because everybody wants to see you and Chime. Go ahead, Ted.
I spoke to the incredible people at Granite Links, and they will allow spectators. Chime and I, 9-hole match. I think we talked the other day about end of April, Shime. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So,
because you were worried about it being a little chilly.
I had
Shime,
the T-shirt.
I was not
made.
Worried about any. Shime.
I mean, you said it on these airwaves, Greg. I don't know what you want from me.
I asked you. I want you to be able to perform at your best.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, for you in the 95 to 100 range.
Okay.
So, I don't want, but we can go. I'll go next week. Club opens up, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday. We can go next week.
Like I said, Greg, you name the date and the time, and I will be there.
The pre-diabetic open will either Shime or Greg shoot under their BMI.
So the end of April gives you
the pre-diabetic open. weather permitting.
Right.
Has to be 75 degrees and beautiful.
The pre-diabetic open, what's higher, the score or their sugar levels?
Like the hardos who drive down to the Cape,
mm-hmm.
you know, in early December in their rain gear. No, thank you. It's got to be 60. And,
so then you probably
dry. At least and dry.
Go yeah. there and the April then gives you some time for the weather to get nice, and yeah. it gives you know Shyman yourself some time to maybe hit the links a little bit, get yeah. some practice.
Good opportunity for somebody to dress Greg and Shyman and maybe make a little donation. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I do have a dress Greg to mention today. I'll mention that coming up, and we're gonna play your Hill Notes. As well, in just a little bit.
And we should invite Sam Kennedy to hit the first tee shot as a means to maybe grease the skids for next year's first pitch for us.
This is disrespectful from my unappreciative son.
Mm.
I love when Brees chimes in.
You know you can't give yourself six-footers when you play against Shime, right?
Wow.
Wow, shots fired.
What does that mean?
A putt.
There's no gimmies.
Give myself six
he says, like, oh, this is good, right?
Oh.
He just picks it up and doesn't have to finish the putt.
Wow.
What is embarrassing is all that right. kid played, you know, football at Bentley,
right.
finger quotes,
right.
and I destroy him day after day, week after week on the golf course.
Well, that makes sense. Bad athletes are good at golf.
I'm shocked. I expected it to be a shot at me. This time it was a shot at you.
Yeah.
So no gimmies, huh? Wow.
Greg John-un out there on the course.
Here is Courtney with what is trending right now.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Subaru of New England. The Celtics win easy against the Suns, 132-102. The final in Arizona. No Jason Tatum. Kristaps Porzingis led the way with 30 points. Not the same energy for your Bruins. They dropped their seventh straight, this time to the Ducks. Final score 6-2. It is opening day. The Red Sox are in Texas to take on the Rangers. It's the former Sox ace versus the new, as Garrett Crochet will take the mound for the Sox, while Nathan Eovaldi will take it for the Rangers. First pitch at 4:05. You can listen to the game right here on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's Perfecting the Art of Fresh. Will and Will are on the call, and it kicks off with Christian Arcan on the MassMutual pregame show at 3:05. March Madness resumes today. BYU is taking on Alabama to kick things off at 7:09. Then Florida faces off with Maryland. Duke has Arizona, and Texas Tech has Arkansas. And the NCAA hockey tournament kicks off today. Half of the 16 teams in it are from New England. 2 p.m. we'll see BU and Ohio State. 5 p.m. Western Michigan and Minnesota State face off. Michigan State and Cornell take the ice at 5:30. And Minnesota and UMass end the day at 8:30. With so much to love, you don't want to miss the Subaru of New England A Lot to Love event. Find your authorized Subaru retail at SubaruofNewEngland.com. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
Greg, in all sincerity, I'm going to ask you to get this done. April 25th, 2016 will be 10 years, God willing, sober. That day, I will throw out the first pitch at Fenway Park.
Okay.
So a year from now, God willing, if I don't get drunk today.
Okay.
April 25th, 2016, Sam. Let's get it done. 38 degrees and sunny afternoon, high of 48.
2026, you mean?
What did I say?
2016.
I don't want to go back to 2016. That yes. sucks. Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
We Sorry. Are going to play your Hill Notes back next.
Willier, felicitaciones, congratulations, fantastic job. You can answer in Spanish all you want, we'll translate away, but thank you so much for joining us. You must be flying high, two home runs on opening day.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Well, what was in your mind, you know, 2-1 game, fifth inning, Nate Eovaldi, nasty stuff. There's something about this ballpark and you. What were you thinking in both those spots?
I mean, I know Eovaldi is a good pitcher, so I was just trying to stay focused, waiting for something that I can hit, and, you know, he gave it to me.
Two balls, two home runs. I guess, Willier, now you got one for each of your new twins, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Willier, look, you didn't have a ton of spring training at-bats. I know you got some on the backfield, but that is not the same as real game at-bats. You sure look locked in mid-season form, huh? How you seeing it?
Yeah, I mean, I know I didn't have too much action on spring training, but I feel very good. I think I took enough at-bats, like you say, in the backfield, but yeah, that helped me a lot to, you know, get the rhythm back.
Willier, what is it about this ballpark? We remember that crazy emotional day for you last year. You lose your grandmother, you hit a couple home runs, one of them off a lefty. What is it about this place that makes you feel so good?
I don't know. I mean, this is a great field to hit. I feel very comfortable hitting here. I don't know. I mean, the things just happen, you know?
We do, and we appreciate you taking the time. We know you doubled up on TV and radio. Thank you so much, Willier. Welcome back. New dad strength on Power. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Jones and Keefe, WEEI. It's opening day. You got the Red Sox and the Rangers pregame, a little after 3 o'clock here on WEEI. First pitch, a little after 4 o'clock. Garrett Crochet. I think we have him penciled in for 15 Ks today.
He should dominate.
Against Nathan Eovaldi. We'll talk to Rob Bradford, as we do every Thursday at 11:30. He's got some good intel on the Red Sox and their pursuit of Nathan Eovaldi this offseason, plus all his thoughts on opening day. We'll also do our live Dong draft pool coming up at 11 o'clock sharp. Most home runs in Major League Baseball. Who's going to pick them? Me, Keith, Terp, Nick, Billy. Find out live at 11. In the meantime, we did this during the NFL season. We made all of our NFL predictions right before opening kickoff. Yes. Who won that, by the way? Was that Billy, too?
I think Billy might have.
Did you win that, too, Billy?
I forget. I might have. Yeah. Wow. He might have taken it home.
Billy's our top draft prospect, and he also won our NFL predictions.
My Drake May week six start, I think, put me over the edge.
Yeah, that might have been the tiebreaker. Good work there, Bill. So we'll do the same thing for Major League Baseball. We're going to predict how many All-Stars on the Red Sox, Cy Young winners in both leagues, MVP in both leagues, and your World Series matchup. So let's start with Keith. Who do you have in the World Series?
I'm going partly chalk, I guess. I'll take the LA Dodgers. I think it's just so overwhelming what they've done. I'm sorry. Sorry to do it. And I'm also going to apologize. I'm very high on the Red Sox, but not that high. So I'm going to go Dodgers over Kansas City Royals.
Oh, nice.
I'm going with the Royals.
I think I know who Keith.
The Dodgers to the World Series.
That's right.
I think I know who Keith's MVP is.
You probably do. Yeah, you probably do. So usually there's a little bit of a theme. But no, like the Dodgers thing is just so overwhelming. Like if they don't win, like what a story that is. Like they've become a real villain. That's the team everybody's chasing. It's sort of like the Yankees had that run. That's now the Dodgers. Their lineup's insane. They got like 10 starting pitchers that would be the number one or two on like most teams. It's outrageous what they're doing. So I'll take the Dodgers. But in the American League, I'll take the Kansas City Royals.
Okay.
What you got?
I have the Philadelphia Phillies over your Boston Red Sox.
Ooh, the Dombrowski Bowl.
Dave Dombrowski taking down the Red Sox. Phillies plus 1,000 to win the World Series. Red Sox plus 1,800 to get there.
That's a good one.
So that would be my matchup. I'm buying into the Red Sox hype. I'm part of the problem, Keith.
Yeah, I guess so.
With too much hype, too much expectations around the Red Sox, that's me.
Uh-huh.
So Keith has Dodgers over Royals. I have Phillies over Red Sox. Billy, who you got?
Opening day, my inner honk really comes out around this time of the year.
Okay. I like it.
All good.
Red Sox over Phillies.
Wow. Same. Yeah, yeah. Wow, okay. So
same matchup.
In my
different
face.
Outcome.
Phillies.
I thought I was really getting in front of that one. Good job.
Well, the Phillies? No, the Phillies are a good team.
No, they are.
Taking down Dave Dombrowski. Red Sox revenge. Score one for John Henry, says Billy. Nick, who are you going with?
Three honks. But I have the Braves over the Red Sox.
Okay.
The
uniform sucked you in. I can see what's going on there. Yeah.
So they're hopefully going to be healthy this year. So I got the Braves winning it all.
Okay.
Yeah. I do have the Sox in the ALCS. I know you didn't ask, but I do have them there.
What a Red Sox hater, Keith.
I do like the team a lot this year.
This is like when Keith got boxed out on Baker Mayfield.
Wait a minute. I thought I was high on these guys.
You hate the Red Sox. Not high enough. Okay. Three of us have the Red Sox in the World Series. Billy has them winning it. Okay, let's get to our MVPs, American and National League. Who you got, Keith?
Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be the MVP. I think he might be the best like all-around player in baseball. We'll show Ohtani aside. I think he's the best all-around player, but best all-around player in the American League. I think it's a great debate between he and Gunnar Henderson. Obviously, Judge smacks a ton of ding-dongs, but I'll take Bobby Witt. And then in the National League, this is where I will put my money where my mouth is.
Okay.
Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker is a boss.
This is definitively your guy.
Kyle Tucker is my guy. He is the most underrated player in baseball. He is going to quietly dominate this season. And in baseball, too, we've seen many years where you don't need to be on the best team to be the MVP. So if you kind of overwhelm people with some stats, if I'm not going with Ohtani, maybe he has to get hurt or something. So I will go with Kyle Tucker.
Okay. So I agree. You don't need to be on the best team to win the AL MVP. I actually have Vladdy in the American League, plus 1,400.
Oh, nice.
Contract year, mashing. The thing that holds me back is Toronto a playoff team? You at least got to be a decent team to win MVP. You don't have to be the best team in the American League. I'll go with Vladdy, though, at plus 1,400. And then I have the Phillies going far, so Bryce Harper in the NL, also plus 1,400.
Nice. I also chose Vladdy Jr.
Okay,
a lot of contract talk, a lot of trade talk. Yep. I think he's going to mash this season. And for the NL, I went with another junior, Fernando Tatis
Jr. Nice. Ooh, I like that.
I like Fernando Tatis.
Maybe a preview for 11 o'clock. Mm. We'll see. Nick?
I also went with Bobby Witt Jr. for the American League. I was between him and Gunnar Henderson, but Witt is very good.
It's a good pick.
And I also went with Francisco Lindor for the National League. He was way up there last year. I think he continues that season this year.
Okay.
I like it.
Those are our MVP picks. How about the Cy Young, Keith?
All right, so I'm going to go Garrett Crochet. A couple weeks ago was saying, you know, as long as this guy makes 30 starts or thereabouts, I think he is going to win the Cy Young. He's going to have a pile of strikeouts. I think the team is going to be good. Maybe I don't think it's going to be quite as good as you guys do, but I think they're going to be a playoff team. So I think he's going to hit the over on his wins, the over on his strikeouts, and probably the under on his ERA when we were doing all those numbers before. And then the National League, I did like the favorite quite a bit, but I'm going to go with another one of my guys. Back in the NL, pitcher for the Snakes is Corbin Burns. So give me Corbin Burns, return to the NL, wins a Cy Young.
Okay, so this is my one chalky pick. I went Skeens in the National League. He's plus 200. He's fun. How could you not root for him? I think he can win the Cy Young. I went with your Kansas City Royals, Cole Reagans, in the American League, plus 850 to take home the Cy Young. I think those were third best odds. Mm-hmm. So those are my Cy Young picks. Billy?
Okay, so I'm going with Max Fried of the Yankees.
Ooh.
My pick, with Garrett Cole out. Let's light shine on him a little bit.
Yep.
And then from the NL, I went with the NL champs. I went with Zach Wheeler as the NL Cy Young winner.
I like it. Makes sense.
Very good.
In fact, I probably should have done that. Okay, go ahead, Nick.
I feel like I went a little chalky. I went Tark Skubal going back-to-back Cy Youngs.
Well, somebody's going to have that.
And
that's good.
Paul Skeens for the National League. Yeah. I kind of want to do Skeens MVP and Cy Young winner.
Oh, that's too late for that.
But the Pirates probably are not going to be good enough for him to be the MVP.
Fair. How many guys, as research project for Rich Keith Stats and info in the next break? No, how many guys have won back-to-back Cy Youngs?
Oh, probably a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, Randy did it. Yeah, probably more than
probably a ton of guys.
It happens
more
often than not, Jones. Yeah. All right, we'll look that up. Red Sox All-Stars, how many and who are they, Keith?
So I'm only going to go with three. I think Garrett Crochet.
Seven!
Yeah. Garrett Crochet, obviously. He might even be a candidate to start the All-Star game. And, you know, whether or not he does is based on when he pitches. I think Jarren Duran does have another good year. Jarren Duran was a beast last year. He was fifth in WAR. So even if he drops off, it's still more than enough to be an American League All-Star. And I'll take Bregman at the old hot corner. I think Alex Bregman has a good year.
So we have
same guys?
Exact same three. I thought maybe you'd go Devers over Bregman. I have Duran. No. You'll hear in our Red Sox season preview, I'm pretty bullish on Duran. I've been bullish all along on Bregman. And Crochet, I don't have him winning the Cy Young, but he should absolutely be an All-Star. So 1, 2, 3. Me and Keith are the same. Billy's smiling. Go ahead.
Crochet, Duran, Bregman.
So none of us have Devers so far.
No.
Nick?
Well, I only have two. Devers, Crochet.
Oh, Devers, Crochet.
What a hater. I thought Keith hated the Red Sox. You hate the Red Sox.
I love the Red Sox.
Interesting.
Bregman's going to have to beat up guys like Jose Ramirez and stuff, though, so I don't know if he's going to get in.
In the American League, 86-87, Roger Clemens back-to-back Cy Young. In 97-98, Roger Clemens back-to-back Cy Young. 99-2000, Pedro back-to-back Cy Young. Then there was a lot of non-back-to-back guys. Okay. Verlander had a gap in between his.
So Clemens and Pedro, that's it?
Greg Maddux won four straight. Yeah. So that's back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Randy Johnson
that's
two
won. Back-to-backs.
Randy Johnson won four straight. Also back-to-back-to-back.
So the National League, Keith. These are apples and oranges.
Tim Lincecum won back-to-back. Clayton Kershaw won back-to-back. Max Scherzer won back-to-back. Jacob DeGrom won back-to-back.
Okay, so in the National League, it happens quite often.
Sure.
But
take it.
With Skubal?
Skubal, no. It seems
you
got to
be Clemens or Pedro.
Good point.
Okay, so in your face, Nick.
Yep.
So those are our Red Sox season predictions. If you missed any of it, it's on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. You can listen live there. You can listen to old segments. Take it with you wherever you go.